with introductions from the court. I'm Mike Havigan, the Chief Justice. And by seniority, I will first turn to WebEx and Justice Miller Lerner.
Good morning.
William Castle.
Stephanie Stacy. Good morning.
Jeff Funk. Good morning.
Jonathan Pappin.
John Friedenberg.
Thank you very much. Council, please leave your masks on when you are not presenting, but when you are presenting, please take your masks or mask off so that we can hear and understand you. Are there any questions? This is the case of State versus Samantha R. Blocker. Any questions from council? Thank you very much. Mr. Catlett, good morning to you. You may approach and proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, Your Honors, Counsel, may it please this court. My name is Matt Catlett. I represent the appellant Samantha R. Blocker in this matter. I'd like to ask that 2 minutes be reserved for rebuttal. This is a case that the facts are fairly undisputed. A person is arrested, charged, released on granted bail, released on bond. At some point during the pendency of the case, a order is issued by the court requiring defendants, comma, except those incarcerated, comma, and their counsel to appear at a call of the court's docket. I get that order. I'm the counsel. I put it on my calendar. I show up. The day before, I learned that my client has been arrested and is incarcerated in the Douglas County Jail. Email the prosecutor. I think the following morning, I appear at the docket call. I announce to the judge, look, Ms. Blocker was arrested last night on suspicion of shoplifting. She's incarcerated right now in the Douglas County Jail, but we're ready for trial. State asks for a warrant, which the judge grants, and that's it. No order to appear at a supplemental docket call, nothing like that, just warrant issue. So,
did you request a continuance or anything at that time?
No, did not request any sort of continuance, just said, we're ready for trial, and she's incarcerated in the Douglas County Jail. I think I even had a copy of the printout that I had emailed to the prosecutor, and my recollection is that the judge just turned to the prosecutor and asked, said something like, I assume you're going to be asking for a warrant, and the prosecutor said yes. So that's how that ended, and so we hit the six-month spot under 29-1207. File a motion for absolute discharge.
Excuse me, Mr. Catlett, when you informed the court that you were ready for trial, what did that mean? The client was not present for the hearing. How did you intend to get your client?
Well, it is not the defendant's responsibility to ensure the defendant's appearance for trial. If the defendant is incarcerated, I was simply telling the court that we were not requesting a continuance to a later date.
And the state responded by getting a warrant for your client. What else could the state have done?
Well, so this is, I guess, the whole argument here, and that is that it is our position, it's my position, that when a defendant has been released, when 29-1207 applies, which it did here, and a defendant has been released on bail, and at some point during that, she is or he is arrested and detained, at least within the state of Nebraska, that it is the state's responsibility to get that defendant to the trial, to court. In this particular case, the state adduced no evidence at the hearing on the motion for absolute discharge of any efforts that it took to secure. I mean, I think we all would agree that the defendant can't do anything herself to secure her appearance in a Lancaster County case when she's a pretrial detainee in another county. This is not like the situation in state. Well, this is not like a situation where she is in the custody of the Department of Correctional Services, where the statute governing a speedy disposition of untried charges, where the person must affirmatively demand a disposition of untried charges, and then that document gets forwarded to the county attorney. There's nothing in 29-1207 that says what she has to do. The only thing I did was I didn't want to move for a continuance at the hearing of the court's docket. And so I said, look, we're ready for trial. She just needs to be brought here for the trial.
Going back to the order to appear for the docket call, is there another document that listed the incarcerated inmates?
I think it is the custom that as part of the order to appear at a call of the court's docket, the court may just as a courtesy attach like an exhibit or something that shows like all of the pending cases and the number of days left in the statutory speedy trial clock and who the prosecutor is and who the defense counsel is.
But your client would not have been listed on that because she wasn't incarcerated in Lancaster County.
Yeah. Right. That's right. She wasn't incarcerated in Lancaster County at the time that order was entered.
So was she ordered to appear for that docket call?
Well, the order says all defendants except those incarcerated. It didn't say except those incarcerated in Lancaster County. It didn't say except those incarcerated in this case.
At the time the order to appear was issued, did it apply to your client by the terms of the order?
Well, it said all. Yeah, I mean, I guess it applied to every defendant who was not incarcerated.
Incarcerated.
What Your Honor is asking is whether incarcerated meant incarcerated at the time the order was entered, not at the time of the hearing. I guess it's our position that when you're talking about whether a defendant is absent or unavailable, the defendant has to be ordered to appear. And if there is if the order that orders you to appear says except those incarcerated, that would exempt her.
Is the exact language? I'm not saying because I don't have it in front of me. Except someone who is incarcerated?
It actually, and I quoted this in my brief, what it actually says is, it is ordered that defendants, comma, except those incarcerated, comma, and their counsel appear for a call of the criminal docket. That's the exact words.
So there was neither a present tense verb nor a future tense verb used in that articulation. It was perhaps ambiguous.
Well, I don't think it's ambiguous. I think it's clear. I think it means that if you're incarcerated, you are exempt from appearing at that time.
I understand, but assume that we think it's ambiguous. How do we resolve the ambiguity?
In favor of the defendant. So I guess it sort of ties into the next issue, and that is, let's assume that the defendant was absent or unavailable as that, you know, as we use that phrase in the statute. The state in its brief harps on this. Here, Blocker was arrested in Douglas County due to her own voluntary choice. I want to make sure that we to engage in shoplifting while she was free on bond. We can't evaluate it that way. We can't. You know, there is a presumption of innocence. The mere fact that she ultimately was convicted or pled or whatever shouldn't control. The reality is that, yes, the facts are different from State versus Steele. State versus Steele was released on bond, fugitive warrant from Colorado, Lancaster County attorney, the same county attorney that was prosecuting the defendant, you know, files a fugitive complaint. Arrested on that, then voluntarily sent to Colorado. Your Honor said, well, state wasn't required to send him away. So I guess what our position is that the true holding of Steele can be summarized by, you know, when it is through the efforts of the state that a defendant is, you know, in custody or incarcerated, the state must then take efforts to get that defendant to the trial. Here, there's nothing that Ms. Blocker could have done to secure her presence for the trial or for any reason other than the state asking a motion for a writ of habeas corpus ad prosequendum. I'm not sure that that would really be the thing here for when a person is a pretrial detainee in another county's jail. But I just want to emphasize to this court that it is not Lancaster County versus Samantha R. Blocker and Douglas County versus Samantha R. Blocker. It's the state of Nebraska. It's the state. So otherwise, we are just creating a situation where a person who's and I understand there's this unpublished opinion in Chamberlain, and there might be situations where a defendant is in a pretrial detainee in another county's jail, and that for whatever reasons that matter somehow the court that defendant needs to appear or can't appear in the Lancaster County case. But in this particular case, and I'm out of time, there was no efforts taken by the county attorney, the state, to secure Ms. Blocker's presence for trial, and they're the only ones that could. They can't just rely on the warrant to sit on their hands.
Before you conclude, Section 29.1207, I believe the judge excluded time under subsection D, is that correct?
Right. Yes.
So
that is the
I'm
relevant.
Curious about subsection A, which as I read it says the period of delay resulting from other proceedings concerning the defendant, which include and the time consumed in trial of other charges against the defendant. What does that mean? And is that relevant for this case?
I'm not sure what that means, Your Honor. I know that that's not what Judge Merritt addressed in her order. The focus was on 29.1207, the subsection 4D, not the other proceedings. As I recall, even the other proceedings, if you read on, it says things like motions to suppress or there are other motions. It does say other charges. I've not been able to determine what that means.
Wouldn't the Douglas County proceeding be other charges?
It's possible. I guess our position remains here. I can't address it right now. That's not how the judge evaluated it. But our position would still mean that the state can't just sit on its hands and do nothing. It is the state and the court's responsibility to get the defendant to trial within 6 months, not the defendant's. So,
can you help me with the record real quick? I just haven't looked at. Did the appellant at any point in time filing request to be transferred back to Lancaster County or a demand for the jury trial to be set or anything like that?
No, okay. Didn't file a demand. It's not governed by disposition of untried charges when a person's in Department of Correctional Services custody. This is just a pretrial detainee. There's nothing to even do. So no, the answer to that is I did not.
Okay, thank you.
But before you sit down, the docket call order itself, though, is more than just an order for a docket call. It starts out by saying the following cases are called for trial during a particular identified precise term. And then it goes on to set the docket call and who's supposed to come and what you're supposed to be ready to do, correct?
Right. Yeah.
So this isn't a case where the case was never set for trial. Your client's case was on the jury trial docket for May 6th, 2019. Is that correct?
We were ready to go to trial. Okay. I mean, we had prepared for trial. We were ready to go to trial. And I announced that to the judge at that time. There was no reason that we couldn't have a trial. But I can't do anything to get my client out of the Douglas County jail. So that's.
Thank you.
Have you ever filed a motion Yeah, I have a client transfer from Lancaster County Jail for appearance.
Well, I think in modern times, a lot of hearings are done where the defendant is in custody and is appearing by a video conference. And there are some judges that have determined that, like, certain things can't happen without the defendant physically being next to his or her counsel in the courtroom, such as entry of pleas. But some things are done, you know, remotely. I think that I have, in the context of a change of plea hearing, requested that the court make sure to transport the defendant to the hearing, because otherwise they'll just leave the defendant at the jail and just have them appear on the video monitor. That's about the closest thing that I can think of that I've filed, something like that. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Osborne, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Jordan Osborne, Assistant Attorney General, representing the appellee, the state of Nebraska. This is a statutory speedy trial case where appellant argues that the district court erred in denying her motion to for absolute discharge. The appellant first argues she was not absent or unavailable from court as a result of her failure to appear for a pretrial hearing on April 17th, 2019, because she was exempted from appearance as an incarcerated defendant. The state disagrees. First, this claim was never raised before the district court, and it's well established in Nebraska that when an issue is raised for the first time in an appellate court, it will be disregarded, in as much as a lower court cannot commit error in resolving an issue never presented and submitted to it for disposition.
What was that raised before the district court?
The fact that the claim that she's making that I was an incarcerated person, so I'm exempted from the hearing, that was never raised at the motion, the hearing on the motion for absolute discharge.
What was the defendant's theory on the motion before the district court?
Before the district court is just the second issue, that the time period is attributable to the state, not to the appellant. As for the actual merits of that argument, the record shows that the appellant was not exempt from appearance at the docket call hearing. If you look specifically at that April 3rd, 2019 district court order to appear for docket call, the appellant was ordered to personally appear in court with her attorney on April 17th. When the docket call order was issued on April 3rd, the appellant was not identified by the district court in its enclosed list of cases as being in custody and exempt from personal appearance. And the order specifically states that the personal appearance of the defendant and the attorney is required, and that the defendant can only be excused from appearing by order of the court. No such order exists in this record excusing the appellant from personal appearance. And then you get to April 17th, the appellant failed to appear for the pretrial hearing because the previous evening on April 16th, she was arrested for felony shoplifting in another Nebraska county, that being Douglas County. And as a result of that arrest, she was held in the Douglas County Jail, unable to post bond.
Your opposing counsel has characterized the hearing as a representation. We're here and ready to go to trial. And I haven't looked at the bill of exception, but assuming that what we heard this morning is what happened at that, isn't there a statute that requires felony defendants to appear in person?
If there is, I'm not familiar with the statute, so I apologize. But yes, the record does generally, it indicates that defense counsel appeared without the defendant, informed the court where the defendant was, that she was in jail for being arrested for an offense the previous evening, and that they were ready to proceed to trial.
What more do you think he should have done, defense counsel?
Well, at that point, I don't know that defense counsel could have done anything to secure her appearance. She had already put herself in a position where she was unable to appear. Now, she could have posted bond possibly and then would have been able to appear at that point. But her own actions are what caused her non-appearance, not the state's actions.
Could the state have asked for a transport order?
They could have, but the state, there's no obligation on the state to essentially what defense counsel is asking for is for the state to remedy a defendant's absence. That the defendant has created her own absence by voluntarily going out and committing another crime elsewhere in Nebraska. She gets caught, she gets arrested for it, she's sitting in jail. She's unable to post bond. A bond was given, but she's unable to post it. And so she has created her own absence. And
the absence to which you refer is, if I may, commonplace and in many cases covered by statute. For example, a defendant in Lancaster County could be held, say, in another state, right? And then there would be an interstate law on detainers. That statute would cover that circumstance. Or perhaps a defendant of Lancaster County could be in another institution run by the Department of Correctional Services, right? And there's a statute that covers that, correct?
That is correct.
So therefore, in this circumstance, what we're addressing is that, as I understand it, this defendant is not in the custody of the Department of Correctional Services, the state institution, correct? She's in the Douglas County Jail. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And so what are the principles that would, what would be the principles? Who has ultimately the burden of getting that defendant to trial, because these other statutes, Steele or Tucker cases, don't seem to address, right, the defendant who is in a local jail. So that is that not our situation?
Those other statutes,
the burden to get her there.
Those other statutes don't address a defendant being in a county jail because they don't apply to somebody in pretrial custody. They apply to somebody who is post-trial serving a sentence. So if, say, for example, if she had been committing her shoplifting offense in Pottawatomie County, and it happens to be in Iowa, she does not have the ability to make a motion or petition through the Interstate Agreement on Detainers to have her transported back to Lancaster County for untried charges while she is pretrial in another state. That pretrial custody, those other statutes would not provide her with that ability to do that as a pretrial prisoner, either under the Interstate Agreement on Detainers or under the other statute 29-3801 to 3809. So
I think we're in agreement that those statutes aren't applicable. So now we're down to how do we solve this dilemma and who should take the initiative? Isn't that where we're at?
Well, she wouldn't have had that mechanism anyway through those other statutes had they applied in the situation. So the fact that she happens to be in pretrial detention within the state of Nebraska, that doesn't change the analysis. She still doesn't have that mechanism to demand to be transported, to be brought back to Lancaster County. And there's nothing that requires the state to remedy her own absence caused by her own actions.
You've made reference several times to she did a voluntary act. She shoplifted or allegedly shoplifted, and that resulted in her in the incarcerated pretrial detention in Douglas County, correct?
Correct.
And you made reference to that, those voluntary actions on her part. Have we recognized that case law, or is there a statutory recognition of that so that that ultimately excludes speedy trial calculation time?
Well, this court has stated multiple times an accused cannot and should not be permitted to take advantage of a delay where the accused is responsible for the delay, either by action or inaction. The absence, her absence at the pretrial hearing was not the result of the state of Nebraska. It was not the result of the Lancaster County authorities. In fact, it couldn't have been because she wasn't in custody of Lancaster County at the time that she committed the offense.
Douglas County, state of Nebraska.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the beginning.
Isn't Douglas County, state of Nebraska.
It is in the state of Nebraska, but this is not like the Steele case where the Lancaster County authorities were responsible for that defendant's absence by allowing him to be extradited to another state voluntarily and without being required to do so. Here, she went out and committed an offense and was arrested for felony shoplifting as a result. Her own incarceration, because of that choice, is what resulted in her absence on April 17th.
That's, I think what we're dealing with is she may have voluntarily done something that got her into pretrial detention, but it is also true, isn't it, in Tucker, Steele, or any of those cases, those defendants did something that got them incarcerated, but their situation is addressed by statute, interstate detainers, so forth, or 2938-02, right? So they're all voluntarily doing these things that put them, quote, behind bars. So that's the common denominator. The question is there a statutory or constitutional or other principle that would require the state to fetch her, or for her, conversely, to take action to appear? What would be the principle? Not that she's voluntarily there. They're all voluntarily there in a sense.
Well, the state doesn't have any obligation at that point to bring her back to Lancaster County. There isn't a statute that requires that. There isn't any case that requires that. And this court in Tucker and the Court of Appeals adopted the same reasoning in Chamberlain. This court rejected that exact same argument in Tucker, stating that such an assertion ignores the fact that such action could have affected Tucker's availability for pretrial proceedings and trial on the Jefferson County charges, resulting in a delay of their disposition. So the same applies here. If Lancaster County transports her back to Lancaster County for trial, that could affect speedy trial issues in Douglas County. She fails to appear for a hearing up there. And then who's responsible for that delay? Can't the state
coordinate that between the prosecutor's offices? I mean, everybody's got the speedy trial clock clicking. Can't that be coordinated by the prosecutors?
It could be, but you can also imagine hypothetically where somebody goes around commits various different crimes in various different counties, posting bond as they go. And you can have somebody with four or five different counties with four or five different cases. And this person has to be now shuttled around to all of these different counties with different speedy trial clocks, with different hearings that are occurring. And yet, if at any point that defendant were to fail to appear for a hearing because they're somewhere else, that speedy trial time is going to, that delay is going to be caused, and who's going to be responsible for that delay? The state's going to end up being responsible for that delay. So
the Chief Justice asked your opponent a question about the potential application of Section 29-1207 sub 4A. How would you respond to that?
My response to that would be, I don't know exactly what that language means. I don't know that this court has specifically stated
the language to you. The period of delay resulting from proceedings concerning the defendant and the time consumed in the trial of other charges of the defendant. It lists a number of things, and then it says, and the time consumed in the trial of charges. Other charges against the defendant.
Correct. And that's
so what do you think that means?
And while I was preparing the brief in this case, I considered that language because there isn't a case that I'm aware of that specifically identifies exactly what that means. I did not present that as an argument, not knowing exactly how this court would interpret
the language of the statute?
The language of the statute suggests that a proceeding The time that's consumed in any other proceeding is excludable time.
Wouldn't the Douglas County proceeding be another proceeding? It could be.
And the question for this court on that particular issue would be, what exactly does that mean when you're referring to the time consumed by another proceeding? Is that all of the pretrial time consumed, pretrial and the actual trial, or is it the trial itself? I don't know that this court has specifically identified exactly the scope of that language, which
was the language in A presented to the trial court?
The trial court mentioned the language. I think if you look at the Bill of Exceptions, the trial court mentioned that subsection. I believe the trial court made its finding under 4D, but also referenced that subsection, indicating that in addition, there is this other subsection that talks about this. And I don't know if it's in the Bill of Exceptions or if it's in the order, the written order on the motion for discharge. But I think there is a reference to that subsection, also indicating that the statute does say that.
Ultimately, is this a question of law?
Well, I believe the fact that her absence, the fact that she was absent, and the district court's finding that absence was attributable to her and not the state, I would argue those are factual questions, and that's reviewed for clear error. And
but whether sub A or sub D applies, isn't that a question of law?
That would be a question of law, yes. But I think the fact that the district court did make a factual finding that not only was she absent with notice, her absence was attributable to her and not the state, that's a factual finding that is not clearly erroneous. So unless there are further questions, I'd ask this court to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for
rebuttal? Oh,
thank you. That concludes arguments on this case. Counsel, please distance and wear masks on your way out of the court, if at all possible, and please use the side door when you are leaving. And thank you again for your presence and work this morning.